Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Happy, I don't even know. What are we happy for this week?
Happy NBA season starts this week.
Yeah, all right. Yes, we are happy about this with our respective, well, I'm happy about it. Okay. I guess, are you as a newly minted kind of Utah Jazz fan, I guess it is. It is a time of celebration.
Listen, I've made the pilgrimage twice to Salt Lake City in the past 4 years, so I feel like I feel like I'm already all in on the Jazz. I've paid my dues. No,
are you jumping on 8th seed Knicks tape?
No, definitely not. I as a lifelong fan of bad teams by and large, I purposefully have developed a love for the entire league. In the NBA in particular, it's very easy to do that because of how accessible the league makes itself. So I will be just enjoying watching the NBA. I will enjoy watching the Knicks potentially when they're on until they are off my television. It'll be fine. It'll be like most of my seasons as a Knicks fan. This won't be any special level of awful.
No, especially not after the weekend we just had where our beloved Tulane Green Wave unfortunately lost 41-17 to Memphis. Obviously that's the first loss in our minds here.
You could have ranked Tulane the entire time and you chose not to.
Yep.
And now they're not going to be ranked.
It's just awful. We know everyone was watching on Saturday and was as disgusted at the performance as we were. There was no other football games to really get too worked up about. So yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty much it.
Yeah, let's. there was another god awful game on Friday night when the Syracuse Irons lost 27-20 to Pitt. As I tweeted at Dan shortly after the game, we need to open up some space in the dumb game pantheon because this was right up there with the 2011 Pitt Syracuse game.
First battle
in terms of just like unbridled stupidity. And just like
I think like we talk about how confusing the Pitt Syracuse quote unquote rivalry is pretty often because it's been going on forever, but no one actually cares about it. And that's a long time theme of this podcast and the website. But I think Pitt Syracuse is the rivalry that produces the most stupid games that we put in our great Hall of Fame, like pretty clearly, I think.
Yeah, without a doubt. I don't really understand how we've gotten to this point, especially given like how one-sided things have been over the course of this quote unquote rivalry's history before like 2010.
It's basically like Doug Marrone even things out. And then since then it's kind of been what we're dealing with.
It's Doug just Marrone like didn't even nonsense. Things out necessarily. He just like got us back to a level of like, oh, we're playing well against Pitt.
Like, it's just, yeah, it's well, because like the 90s, they couldn't beat us to save their lives. And right. Then the 2000s through the end of G-Rob, we couldn't beat them. Things basically flip-flopped. And then Marrone, well, I don't think Marrone, I think he'll probably only beat them once. Like, it was at least a competitive game there from there going forward. And then even through Schaefer, like, I think most of those games were not like super crazy blowouts. So, and then obviously we beat them. Have we beat them with Dino yet?
Yes, last year.
No,
2 years ago.
2 years ago. Okay. Yeah. So, like,
even then, a bad pit team took us down to the wire. We won 27-24.
Yeah, it's like every game for like going on a decade now has like even I think Pitt has like a pretty decent edge in terms of wins, but like every game is just
yeah, but every
really
7 points
brand of stupid. Yeah. Or 76-61 or whatever that game was, which like
which itself was a stupid game.
Oh, unbelievably stupid. And like it was like kind of a blowout score wise, but like if you've ever watched any like Wazoo game, you know that there's no like after you reach a certain point of like total points, nothing's really a blowout because it's just so crazy that you kind of forget what the margin is. And that was definitely in there. I mean, I think that was the highest scoring game ever for like a bit, for like a year.
Yes. Well, yeah, I mean, it's still the highest scoring game regulation-wise.
I thought something passed it, so, like, the year after.
Western Michigan Buffalo did, but it took right. It took, like, five or six overtimes to do it. And LSU, Texas A&M did, but that also took three or four overtimes.
What did UCLA Wazoo wind up getting to this year? Was it? I don't think they got.
It wasn't. They were at least like 7 points shy.
Okay, so this is it. Still the so it's still then the highest regulation score. Well, hey, Syracuse Pitt, a thing, an accomplishment.
Yeah, that game was weird because I remember I was like starting to put together the recap in like the third quarter, and then that's when things got like stupid. And where everything started picking up, nobody was like every play was a touchdown, pretty much.
Yep. Bless Zach Mahoney.
Yeah, I mean, the dumbest box score in the history of college football.
I like Zach Mahoney.
Five touchdowns. What was the final on that one? It was.
I think it was 76-61. Because I was.
No, I know that.
Mahoney's stats.
I was wondering Mahoney's stat line in that game, which still like. You know, occupies and just an amazing like place in our history as one of the.
Give me one second.
There we go. Yeah, I think
43 for 61 for 440 yards and 5 touchdowns, 1 interception, and then he also ran for 49 yards and 2 touchdowns. So he accounted for 7 touchdowns.
Yeah, he tied a record by Jim Brown, I believe.
Amba and Otawo had 178 yards and 5 touchdowns. Like, if you're storing at home in, I think standard fantasy storing, that would be, let's see, 17.8 plus.
That would have won you a championship, probably.
Yeah, I mean that's a league winner. If you're playing, so yeah, that's a solid like 47.8 points if you're not doing PPR. Irv had 11 catches for 107 yards. Just an unbelievably, unbelievably stupid game.
Yeah, going back to 2011, the aforementioned game that eliminated SU from bowl contention on the final week of the season, we lost 33-20 in that one. We've discussed that one multiple times. The following year was the 14-13. Yeah, you were there. There was the 14-13 game that we discussed last week. But yeah, continue on that.
I'll never forget Chandler Jones, who no one expected to play that week, playing that week, being pretty effective, but basically playing on one leg, intercepting a pass that would have meant having the full field in front of him, but he could like barely run because he was hurt, so he got run down. But it would have probably won the game for us if he had returned it for a touchdown, which he was very close to doing. But we just could not offense at all, so we didn't take advantage of it.
As is a running theme in this quote unquote rivalry,
aside from the 1 year in which we offensed quite a bit.
Yeah, which again odd. It was that 14-13 game. We lost the following year 17-16 in an absolutely excruciating game as well. Note that all of these years Pitt won between 5 and 8 games with no deviation from that. We had the 30-7 game, which was the game that I was pretty much out on Schaefer. That was a team that it looked like they gave up. There was very little fight in them. Pitt pretty much, despite the fact they only quote unquote scored 30 points, Pitt very much dominated the hell out of us.
Yeah, it was.
Rough. There was the 23-20 game in 2015, which I don't have a vivid memory of, but I just remember being angry, as is the norm. Obviously the blowout, not blowout, but the high scoring regulation game in college football history, the 76-61 game in 2016. There's 27-24 game that I mentioned where, we ended up seeing, I think the first appearance of Ben DiNucci. That was when I think that
sounds right.
Yeah. Where I think Peterman might've been out already. And then whoever was backing him up for the USC transfer looked bad. And then Alton Robinson knocked him out of the game. And I think we ended up seeing DiNucci. And then
Pitt, who we dubbed Pitt Mahoney because
Pitt Mahoney.
He was Pitt Mahoney.
Yeah, and then we ended up with the 44-37 game that again aggravated us all to death last year. And then this year's game that phenomenally stupid and maybe even dumber than the NC State game the week before. That was already pretty dumb.
Yeah, it's it was like I think having multiple quarterbacks play is definitely an element here. or at least
three quarterbacks play was even better.
Having three quarterbacks play and none of them quite be effective, but also never fall out of the game and also have a 94-yard touchdown. Yeah, this all adds up. This is all like the stuff you need.
There was also like, and again, like, you know, a certain faction of the Syracuse fan base is always going to get caught up in the ref stuff, and rightfully so in some cases. This was the second straight game where ACC refs kind of struck. Not that they were the reason we lost, but they certainly didn't leave us with any sort of feeling that they were competent. If you recall against NC State, there was the egregious hit after the whistle on DeVito that would have extended the drive, potentially set up SU for the game-winning touchdown pass at a much closer range. In this game, it was Kenneth Ruff caused a really nice fumble. At least it was called as much on the field. And they reviewed it. They overturned it, despite the fact that, you know, on the television broadcast, they said that they really didn't see how you could overturn it because none of the views were there. They said maybe there was another view. Brian Higgins then tweeted out that he had seen another view that wasn't on the broadcast and also didn't know how you could overturn it.
I think he went farther. I think he said you couldn't overturn it on the view that we all saw. And then he saw an alternate view where it looked more like a fumble. So, like, it just sounds like it sounds pretty befuddling. Even if on the replay that we all saw on the broadcast, like, you could be like, you know what? I don't know that that's a fumble. Like, that's not how you're supposed to rule this. Like, there has to be no doubt if you're overturning a call like that. And it does not sound like that is the, I mean, I just don't know how that's the standard you got to, based on what we all saw.
Yeah, it seems like the refs really wanted to go home. They also hated the game.
We all have jobs, but
I didn't want to watch that game anymore, and they certainly didn't. But yeah, I don't know if that was the best way to end it. I'm not saying that Syracuse would have, you know, thrown the game tying touchdown pass, considering that Clayton Welch was already like beaten to a pulp by the Pitt defensive front by that point. I think that this game, this actually provides a good segue into kind of like what happens now. We don't know if Tommy DeVito is going to be ready to go this week against Florida State. Clayton Welch did not look great as a passer, but he did have some moments. I think most importantly, he had pocket presence that Tommy DeVito has yet to really display. That's not to say DeVito can't find it eventually, but you know what? If I was sacked as many times as DeVito's been sacked this year, I'd probably develop a little PTSD and some happy feet too. Just getting scared of just getting absolutely hammered. I mean, the lack of real blitzing that that Pitt did and had no problem kind of getting through was disconcerting and kind of frightening, to be honest. And it tells you that there absolutely need to be some changes this week, whether it's in protection schemes, guys on the field. There really haven't been a lot of guys beyond the starters kind of rotated in. I think at this point, it's very clear that, you know, Mike Cavanaugh needs to do something in a hurry to fix this, really kind of putting DeVito, whoever's under center, in danger. The running game does not exist because the offensive line can't protect. At one point, SU had seven guys in blocking against a standard four-man rush, and they were in within half a second, and DeVito didn't even have a shot to get the ball off. So at this point, like, I mean, I've never seen a Syracuse offensive line this bad, which is saying something when you consider how this group has looked. I also think, you know, there have been a lot of questionable game plan decisions. I actually felt like Dino and Mike Lynch brought in a pretty good game plan to start. Unfortunately, it had to be abandoned pretty quickly, and just mostly due to drops, to be honest. I feel like if the drops hadn't happened and if SU would maybe transition to a screen game once Pitt knew they could get through kind of, you know, untouched, it could have gone differently for Syracuse. It almost did anyway. But yeah, I'm getting concerned about some little things that just aren't being corrected week after week because we kind of trot out something similar that clearly isn't working.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I actually agree with you. I thought early on, especially because we came out throwing for what feels like the first time this year, I actually thought that like the game plan seemed more aggressive and more open. The problem is like when you have the Jackson drop and everything else, like early on, it kind of saps away the aggressiveness that then like gives you the freedom to play with. But going forward, it's tough. I mean, I don't think you can put DeVito out there if he's going to be in harm's way. I think ultimately, like, this offense is going to be at its best if Tommy DeVito is playing and healthy. That's no offense to Clayton Welch, who I think we actually, you know, he hit some big plays. I thought he played probably better than, you know, at least as well or better than you would hope as from your backup former walk-on who we really didn't have a lot of information on. I just think at this point in the year, like, if like DeVito's not going to be what we need if he's not playing at 100%, especially with the happy feet and everything else. So I'm totally fine playing Welsh for a couple of weeks. Hopefully it's not more than that, if at worst, and kind of seeing what we can piece together. I don't think like we're having any kind of like a referendum on Dino's job or anything this year. I think ultimately, if this is going to be a lost season with a banged up quarterback and a bad offensive line, like, you kind of take it as what it is for what it is and try to move forward. I think the biggest questions there are like, what do we do to fix this offensive line? What kind of adjustments do we make to this system to help our quarterbacks out, get receivers more open? Like, I think there are legit questions to be asked about this year so far, without like freaking out because we drop pretty far off of a 10-win season, because you do see this occasionally in college football. Like, I think the biggest question that Babers hasn't really faced before as a head coach, because he's always kind of parlayed his big seasons into the next job. He's never really been in this position before. So I think we've seen coaches who have like a breakout year. You can think of like Colorado's Mike McIntyre, like had the breakout year, didn't parlay that then into like the sustained success, so he wound up losing his job. I don't think that's going to happen with I hope it's not going to happen with Babers. I want Babers to be here long term. But I do think there are questions this year that make you wonder, you know, a bit about how he then faces this adversity and builds off of it, because it is a new position for him. That being said, like, I think it's tough. Like, I don't think things have gone great this year, and I think there are legit criticisms of the coaching staff going in there. But I also think both in things that they didn't do in terms of, like, especially building out this offensive line, and then, like, the things you can't really control, like DeVito getting hurt, you know, it's tough. It's been a tough situation this season. And you hope that in like other years, you know, there, we might've had a bit more luck here. And it's also, I guess, like, we're not getting blown out in these games aside from like the Maryland debacle. Like, these last 2 weeks, part of the reason they've been super frustrating is that they were very winnable games, even with everything that went wrong. So, like, there's a situation where we're still not playing great, but you have some things go, you know, break your way, one play here and there, and all of a sudden you're looking at a 5-2 team that, like, maybe has some real question marks that people aren't totally buying into versus a 3-4 team, and everyone's, like, jumping off ship.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, you know, coaches, teams, programs, whatever, are all evaluated by wins and losses. And the fact of the matter is that we are 3-4 and not 5-2. And it sucks. It's even more frustrating when you arrive here from a 10-3 season. I don't blame fans for being frustrated. I don't blame fans for being annoyed. I know I addressed some of this in the Sunday piece that I wrote, just kind of talking about like how we got here, who the blame's applied to. And to be honest, it's all of us. Like, you know, that includes the players, that includes Dino Babers, that includes the offensive line and offensive line coach Mike Cavanaugh in particular. That includes us as media, us as fans. Like, there's a lot of ways how you get to something that's this disappointing, and then revolves around kind of this feeling of anger and disheartening. And, like, you know, there's a lot of people really jumping off ship hard. And I think that that's, you know, incredibly foolish. That said, like, it doesn't excuse Dino for, you know, some of the issues that have happened here. Like, he brought in to transfer offensive lineman Darius Tisdale, who hasn't seen a ton of time, and I'm actually surprised by that. And Ryan Alexander, who has not looked great, unfortunately. The South Alabama transfer, he was an all Sun Belt guy. It just doesn't really seem like he's, you know, doing all that well this year, unfortunately. Obviously, a quarterback, like, you know, I think DeVito's shown enough, other than like the pocket presence stuff, which again, I think would be mitigated by a quality offensive line. Like, I think DeVito's shown himself to be able to function in this offense. I think where it struggled is he probably needed to earlier in the year to pick up the pace a little bit. And this team needed to fix play calling to adjust for a bad offensive line. And that's where screens come in. And you saw that one drive against Clemson earlier in the year where they used Mo Neal, and were able to drive like right down the field. It was, you know, impressive against a good defense. It was an encouraging drive for a team that really needed it at the time, and also one for a program that really needs, you know, some things to grasp onto. I think that injuries obviously play a huge role here, not as much on the offense as they do on the defense. I think the defense has played admirably considering all the absences. I think they could be even better if there were, you know, if there were fewer injuries. I think, you know, this is potentially, this doesn't necessarily grade out as more than like an average-ish defense, but I think they're actually, you know, a group that would probably be top 30 to 40 in the country, if not for, you know, the injury to McKinley Williams, which is kind of exacerbating the linebacker inexperience. And then obviously the injuries to Andre Sisko and Fitu Melifonwu. You saw last week, even with Andre Sisko playing like sparingly, he made a difference, you know, against Pitt, and especially in that second half when, you know, SU didn't allow a touchdown and mounted somewhat of a comeback with like a, you know, scraped together offense. Again, this is not to excuse anything. This is more just to say, like, there's reasons why this has happened, but there's also things that the coaching staff could have done to maybe mitigate some of these issues. Because, yeah, like, as much as I'm not going to feed into the you know, insane takes, I will say, yeah, you look at this offensive line next year, and it doesn't really look super encouraging. There's obviously some questions elsewhere on the roster, and you know, people have every right to be a little concerned about the fact that recruiting hasn't upgraded to a huge, huge level. I think that Dino should be held accountable for what's occurred this year to some extent, but I don't think that's necessarily a referendum on the entire job he's done, as much as it's a referendum on how maybe he and this team and its coaches have dealt with success.
Yeah, I think those are all incredibly valid things. I think with the play calling, I think there were legit criticisms through the first couple games. Again, I kind of liked what we started doing early, and there were like player mistakes, not play calling mistakes, that kind of took the air out of things early. But I think,
yeah, that first play was the Tristan Jackson touchdown.
Yeah, I mean, if it's not a touchdown, he's done it deep into field goal range off the bat, and like you're putting points on the board early. I just think getting the pace, like forcing the pace to early versus like trying to set up the run and doing other things that I get, like you want to establish because it's a big part of the offense. But I think this offense we know is so much better when you get the pace going, and by forcing those quick slants and those quick screens, you can really start to speed things up, you know, on your own without the offensive line having to generate a huge push that it hasn't been good at all year. And that'll open things up for the running game, you know, as a reverse, and then you can really start to make things happen. So I liked the idea early of trying to get that passing attack in tune. And I thought it would have worked, you know, without the drops. Now without DeVito, I don't know how much that changes things, how much you trusted Welsh to run the same exact things you were going for there. But yeah. I mean, we'll see. I mean,
yeah, no, I know. I mean, he doesn't have the arm strength or accuracy necessarily.
No, but I think you can, if you can steam guys open, like you can get a fraction of it, even if, like, especially considering, you know, I think we've been without a 100% DeVito for a couple weeks here. I don't think it's worth like forcing Tommy into a position where you're going to potentially get him more injured. I think you just need to let him get back to where he's going to be healthy, because I also don't want you, I just don't think it's healthy to like throw him out there at 60%. And if he doesn't play well, like potentially ruin his confidence even more. I think right now he's like our only, like, because Chance Amy transferred out and like, we need quarterback recruiting to get back in the gear here. Summers is obviously not ready. Like DeVito's the guy for better or worse for the definitive future. I think you need to do all you can to make sure he's, you know, well situated. That being said, recruiting is an interesting thing. I don't think we've seen this team reap the benefits of the 2018 season the way you would hope, coming off a 10-win year. This is the year where you'd think that would really start to ramp up, and I think we've struggled to see that so far. And obviously, this fall isn't going to do it any help here. I think quarterback recruiting is a major concern. I think you need to get guys in the door. I think you can miss one cycle here and there, but ultimately you kind of want to bring a quarterback in every year, especially if you're going to have guys transferring out at that position at a higher frequency like we've seen across the sport. Right now, like, DeVito's not a super young guy. He has two more years at most. You're going to want to see, you know, you're going to want to get his heir apparent in the door pretty quick. If it's not, I mean, I know Summers is redshirting in all likelihood, but like,
we don't know what he is yet.
We don't know what he is. The camp.
He wasn't as highly touted as like Yeah, he wasn't as highly touted as DeVito was either. Like, you look at these classes, like, we've really only had, like, two solid hits since, you know, 2016. Not in 2016, right. 2015, really, with Dungy, you know, being a 2015 recruit, and then, you know, DeVito being a 2017 guy. Like, that's really it. And it's not even like hits. It's just literally like guys who can play at the P5 level. Like, we don't need Dungy every single time. We don't need Ryan Nassib every single time. We don't need, you know, DeVito at his high level every single time. You know, we could do something like look around the ACC, it's just like serviceable quarterbacks, like just guys who, yeah, you're good. You can play at the Power Five level. And that's something that I think we're running out of options that don't involve grad transfers. And I know a lot of people are calling for it here now, with, you know, DeVito potentially looking a little shaky, but I don't necessarily know how much that's going to help him. I do think a grad transfer could be a potential option, though, you know, come 2021, depending on where DeVito is sitting at that point.
Yeah, I'm not super afraid of taking a grad transfer if you think it's the right thing to do. And honestly, even if it's to push DeVito, or you think a guy has a good chance of beating him out, like, ultimately, you're going to embrace competition if that's what comes. But I also don't think, like, I don't know that if you plug in a grad transfer on this current team, like, they're going to be doing that much better just because of the offensive line. I think offensive line is another place where the recruiting has been, you know, pretty shaky in terms of results so far. And I think, obviously, Ryan Alexander hasn't really worked out so far this year. I think that's a spot where you're going to want to continue to look at the transfer market, just because there are usually a lot of offensive linemen available, but it's also hard to plug in freshmen.
I think for both, it's hard to plug into this system because it's a pace. Like, you basically what you know SU needs to do, and what, you know, Mike Kavanaugh, if he's still at SU, and Dino Babers as well, like, what everyone needs to do is literally say, okay, like, what position, like, where are guys that are coming out of Texas high schools, that are coming out of the Big 12, that are coming out of, you know, parts of the American Athletic Conference and Conference USA, like, where are those kids coming from that are grad transferring? And, like, are they playing at a tempo that'll work and we can plug right in? Because at this point, like, we don't just need athletes. We need athletes that fit if we want this thing to be kind of salvaged in the short term. And again, I'm not, like, fanning the flames on any sort of, like, oh my God, this thing's going to explode. But, you know, there's definitely some things that have come to light here this season, especially the last couple of weeks when you've seen SU quarterbacks be completely under siege. Like, it's not that hard to generate pressure on this group. We can't run. We have no time. And
we've allowed the most sacks in FBS, I think. Still the case. Well,
we've allowed the most sacks in FBS, not just that. We've allowed the most sacks through seven games, I believe, in the last for a P5 school in the last, like, 10 years.
Yeah, it's bad. It's real bad. And, like, there are more issues than just offensive line. I think in large parts, like, DeVito feeling the pressure where it's not there has kind of compounded things. And that's it's all a cycle. Like, none of it's just, like, the one issue. It compounds on itself. When the offensive line is bad for spurts, it then makes DeVito nervous and hear footsteps and everything else. And then he takes sacks at the offensive line shouldn't really be credited for, but it's all one big issue altogether. So you can't just, like, get rid of, like, one little part of it and then fix it. It has to be, like, kind of fits ground up. I just think, like, it's something that needs to be addressed, hopefully this during the season, but we're kind of running out of time. But then, like, moving forward, we need to, like, I think that just needs to be the number one thing, like, rebuild the line, get guys in who can play the system. There are more and more spread systems every year. So I think you'll see grad transfers out of, you know, teams that, especially if they're coming from the AAC or the Sun Belt, like, there are teams that are running 80 plays a game. I think you can find a couple guys who are comfortable with it. And, like, it just, I just can't imagine how much better things would be if we just had a right tackle who was like a playing B-level ball right now. I just think it would radically shift what we'd look like. And I don't think it would, like, fits everything, but we'd have so many fewer issues if, like, we weren't getting sacked seven times a game. And also we weren't having DeVito freak out after 2 seconds where there's no real rush, but he, you know, moves the pocket for no reason and then throws the ball into like nowhere and gets intentional grounding. So yeah, it's frustrating. It's frustrating to watch every week. It's like, I think it's one of the worst possible things. Like there's in baseball, it's like having the Mets bullpen this year was the worst thing ever. And having a bad offensive line is like the football equivalent. You just dread every time something looks like it might be shaky because like you just feel the ground falling out from under you.
Yeah, that's completely fair. And not to like belabor it too much. But I would just say, yeah, if we could just even have, like you said, one competent offensive lineman maybe at a tackle spot or whatever, like it would do such a world of difference. I think DeVito's confidence is pretty rattled. I think he's pretty banged up at this point. I think this has been the case though for weeks, and this is where the coaching staff, you know, needs to address something. And that is like, okay, like every time we've run with pretty solid tempo, this offense has looked great. This offense looked great. This offense looked like it did last year. The fact that the offense is what's struggling is what's killing fans right now. And you can tell that like just, and I know from my own standpoint, it's that this was not supposed, like I could deal with a bad defense when you hire an offensive coach. You can't deal with a bad offense.
Yeah.
When you bring in an offensive coach. Yeah. It's just, if you know your offensive line can't protect, then why aren't you calling screens? Why aren't you calling quick slants? Why aren't we releasing the ball quicker? It just seems like we have the athletes. There's like Nikeem Johnson, very fast kid. Sean Riley, very fast kid. Mo Neal, very fast kid. Like you have at least three very fast receivers, even if you don't want to use the possession guys.
Who were good last year.
Very fast receivers out there. Yeah. Who were good last year. Like use these players and force teams to play your game. And instead what's happening is SU is allowing every other team to dictate the pace and the rules of engagement in a way that I never thought I'd see from Dino Babers' team. And it's really, I think the crux of what's undermining this group is just that the advantage, which was a simple playbook that just went fast, is now being used against us because we're not playing fast. And now it's just a simple and very predictable playbook.
Yeah. Going into the pick, I think it was before the pick game, numbers came out. We were down basically a full point per possession from last year. I think David Hale tweeted this out. I believe that was him because it's right up his alley. We were one of like the 10 worst teams in terms of like decrease in points per possession. And then we were also separately down from like 83 plays a game to 74. So that's about a possession. It's like a long possession per game. So when you have, when you're taking away a full possession and then the existing possessions, you're losing a point off of them. Like, that's a lot. That's just a huge decrease. And then throw in, like, I'm sure the defense is that'll be just the most frustrated because, as you alluded to earlier, defense has been playing really well. They haven't given up a touchdown in the second half in two games and two losses. I went back and looked, and the last time it happened once was 2015 against Clemson. We didn't give up a touchdown. And then I went back through basically all the games I could find back to, I think, through G-Rob. And it's only happened like a handful of times, and it never happened back-to-back that I could find. But like once in 2014 against Maryland, once in 2011, that Pitt game, we didn't give up a second-half touchdown. So like it's here and there, but that's going to be just so demoralizing when those guys are playing really great football and keeping the game close and keeping it where like we could have beaten NC State, we could have beaten Pitt if for like one better play. So hopefully the offensive figure something out here and gets those guys bailed out because there's still winnable games on the schedule because the ACC is a tire fire, not just us.
Agreed. Yeah, that's really the only saving grace here is that the ACC doesn't know what the hell it's doing. Let's take a little bit of a break for our sponsor. And we're back with beer. Dan, what have you been drinking after Friday's disaster?
After Friday's disaster, I was mostly on some Elysian Space Dust, also some Deuce Islands. A night before, I had a bunch of Lion's Head Pumpkin, which was my first night of really drinking pumpkin beers. Really enjoyed that. I had some Sweet Action from Sitz Point, which was good. And then yesterday, I had a big bottle of Maine Brewing Company's Peeper Ale, which is delicious. Everything from Maine is incredible. So, no complaints there.
Nicely done. On my end, I finished up my 4-pack of Highland Park's Neon. For some reason, Blind Pig's now sitting on shelves out here. So I had some Russian River Blind Pig. Had some Pliny the Elder as well. Picked up a can of Double Dry Hop Booming Rollers from Modern Times. Then I was up in Pasadena yesterday and had a Orange Plaza Pale Ale from Chapman Crafted, which is down in Orange County. Decent pale ale. Just kind of having it with some brunch. So didn't really need too much out of it, but yeah, later, weekend a beer for me. We'll see what this coming weekend brings them.
It brings a Florida State game, so everything is on the table.
Yeah, I'm dreading this one a little bit. At the same time, there are reasons not to. I think that the saving grace that I have here is that Florida State's offensive line is also not good. They're not as bad as us, but they're also not good. There's also the fact that they are not a second half team in any way, shape, or form. And we have been a second half team, even in these bad last couple games.
Yeah, it's I think my biggest concern, aside from like they have a giant talent edge, is like they really need to win this. If they lose to us, like there's a chance that's Taggart's last game. So they will be breaking out all the stops. And
they're going to hire Dino. So great.
I can't imagine them hiring Dino after this year. Thank God. Apparently they're
they moved to beat Florida State. Maybe
that'd be really funny. It'd be like very maudlin on our part, but it would be funny. Oh, yeah. No, apparently there were like I don't know if you read the football stoop piece. There were like Urban Meyer rumors. I would like for that not to happen. I don't think.
I just don't think it can. I just don't think you pay him. There. No.
Yeah, Florida State doesn't have the pocketbooks that other blue blood programs do generally. We saw someone go and literally buy Jimbo Fisher out from under them. I think if USC is serious about getting Meyer, I think they'll outbid. I just think like it's a tough, and I also don't know that he still has Florida ties. I don't know that he would take that job with other good jobs potentially available. So we'll see. But yeah, FSU just lost a wage.
Oh yeah, go for it.
Oh no, I'm just I was just recapping like this is another team that is not averaging over 4 yards a carry. I think maybe on the year, but they were under that for this week. Despite the fact that Cam Akers is amazing, he's like their whole thing. They can't figure out quarterback. Their offensive line's bad. Again, like this is a spot where it wouldn't be crazy for us to pull a win here. They're the same record as us, but it's like the talent is just scares me, even though we just won this game 30-7 last year. So.
And that was a team that kind of seemed like from the beginning of the year was just not into it. And this Florida State team at least seems game. This defense isn't great, but they are aggressive. I don't really think it matters how many sacks you have coming into a game. You should be able to pull up some against us. Florida State's collect 17 sacks on the year. That's not a great number, but it's not a bad one either. It's ranked tied for 44th in the country in terms of total sacks. And it's pretty close to that in terms of sacks per game. SU, as you know, is one of the better teams sack-wise in the country. Collected 23 on the season. Pitt is now the number one team, if they weren't last week already.
I think they already were.
36 sacks. 36 sacks. They had 9 added to the total last week. So good for them. But yeah, Florida State is, again, aggressive defense, talented defense. As long as Cam Akers is on the field, I'd say Florida State has a chance against anyone, but especially us. A team that has struggled at times to stop the run because we've been too busy pulling linebackers into coverage. I saw Andrew Armstrong covering out wide about 25 yards downfield a couple times in that Pitt game, and I was just befuddled. I don't know if that's – I don't consider that a coaching gaffe as much as I consider it a necessity that was coming from the fact that corners were getting victimized a bit. And obviously, you know, when you don't have all your A players out there, in the secondary, and you don't have the ability to maybe rush the passer as well as you did last year, that'll happen. I'm not going to pick a Syracuse win here, but oddly, like I think there's a better shot for it than maybe there was even last week, if only because this is a team that's like a little more downtrodden, hasn't necessarily tasted success in the last couple of years now. I mean, the last couple of years have been disastrous from Florida State standard. While Pitt has actually done a couple things, I think that in general, like this is, if Florida State is truly bad and if Willie's truly on his way out, they lose this game. If Florida State's just a talented squad that just got tripped up the last couple of weeks by two good teams in Clemson and Wake, then Florida State probably beats us by 2 touchdowns. And, you know, SU then starts pondering what the hell happens now at 3-5.
Yeah, I mean, I think unfortunately, like both could be true, but I still think just like the talent edge plus the unknown about what Syracuse's injury situation looks like, and especially with DeVito very possibly not playing, it just I'm very nervous about. I'm not nervous because I think this year's kind of getting away from us, and it is what it is. I'm nervous because, like, I think, you know, we have a chance to, like, I think we've kind of undone a lot of the goodwill we built with the fan base in 1 year, which is not ideal.
I do agree with you there. And I think I kind of got into this a little bit in that piece on Sunday where, like, and you and I talked about this all offseason too, really. Like, we kind of told you guys this could happen, not this, but that 10-3 wasn't what, like, could very easily not happen. And like 9-4 and 8-5, like, those things could very easily not happen. And it could still be a decent year. This is not that. So I'll say that. But admittedly, like, I've maybe to some people's, like, consternation, I do call this fan base out for being pretty fickle and pretty fair weather all the time, especially when it comes to football. This, on the other hand, is a new level of fair weather to me. I think there's ample reasons to be aggravated. You and I spelled out a lot of them already. I've spelled out a lot of them on the site. But this fan base is super out on this team and somehow on Dino already. And like, there's a big difference between being out on him and calling him out and the program out for some missteps like we just did earlier. Like, being this far out on him after a 10-3 season is never going to make sense to me. And the fact that all the goodwill's gone and you can see it's gone is disconcerting to me from a long-term standpoint of, you know, keeping Dino around, assuming that he, you know, rights the ship a bit between this year and next, and potentially after him, like, bringing in top coaching talent. Like, if you see a fan base turn on you that quickly and that loudly, I think, as SU has, like, I don't know how encouraged I am to show up. And obviously, you know, there's fools in every fan base, but I do feel like when despite the fact that we've dealt with a lot of hardship, I do feel like there's a lot of really loud and angry, you know, like, doubts, and not just doubts, but, like, you know, fire Dino, fire, you know, random assistants, like, get rid of every player, all this other crap. Like, 3-4 it sucks. It's annoying. At the same time, we pretty much had the ball near the end of the game with a chance to tie or win each of the last 2 weeks. Like you said, we could be 5-2 despite all the issues. We are 3-4. That's annoying. But I think that there are things that we can address both within this season to still salvage part of it, or at the very worst, you know, tuck our tail between our legs, fix some things, and be better situated next year to deal with what any curveballs that get thrown at us.
Yeah, it's not really helping anybody by immediately at the first sign of adversity after a really good season calling for someone to lose their job because things didn't sustain exactly how you wanted it to. Like,
you're a Syracuse football fan. You know how this works.
Yeah. I mean, I think, again, we just spent like half the podcast levying criticisms of the coaching staff. I think if we win 4 games this year, there will be big changes coming to the coaching staff. I think that's just how this works. And that would be valid. I think Babers has earned himself clearly the 2019 season, probably the 2020 season, no matter what happens. Like, I just think 10 wins in Syracuse, a thing we hadn't done in like 2 decades, gets you pretty far, and it should. It's just like, I just don't think it's hard to, I understand it's hard to like understand your lot in life, especially after a 10 win season, but you have to understand what Syracuse is and what it isn't. And it isn't a place that can afford to fire a 10 win coach after 1 bad season following that and expect to continue to like up the level of coaching staff, because there's a very good chance that even if Syracuse wins 4 games this year and then wins like 6 games next year and gets back to a bowl, that Dino would still get job offers from other jobs because people understand that the Syracuse job is very, very difficult. So you want to like roll with the punches and understand that it's not always going to be like, all right, we're not winning 10 games every year from here on out, because this is not realistic. That's not to say that this year, like, you excuse it, because you don't. You have to go address the things that are clearly broken. But there's a very good chance that your next coach is not going to be as good as Dino. And if that happens, if you hire another G-Rob or another Schaefer, like, you're putting yourselves right back in the hole that you built or that you were trying to dig out of with this Dino hire in the first place. So it's I think people just have a very tough time finding like a nuance filled answer here, and then like levying criticisms without then going all the way to like calling for a job or saying that someone was like smoking mirrors last year. And it's just like, I just struggle with someone going that far off of like a bad 7-game sample. It's also just like distinctly unhelpful if you're trying to be like person who is a fan who is trying to do the best thing for the team. Like you're not doing that by either yelling at people because they are being critical or by acting like the you know, the world is on fire because of one bad half season. So I just hope everyone can kind of find a middle ground here where, yes, you can be critical of the team, of players, even as long as you're not being like a ridiculous person to 18-year-old to 22-year-olds, of coaches, but also say like, hey, this is still the coaching staff. Nothing's going to happen after this year to Dino because he's clearly earned that. And he just had a huge extension and probably a big buyout, and kind of move forward and like address things realistically versus being like super emotional and worked up about it.
Yeah. I mean, there's copious gray area. And it's something I've said a couple times now, like since the Friday night game, like ton of gray. That's where all of us should be operating. You can operate to wings of that gray, but I think the everything's fine crew also wrong. Because everything isn't fine, but the everything's on fire crew, like, come on, guys. I mean, I'm not surprised by it. We see it numerous times. Like, again, if you're a Syracuse fan, you should be used to this at this point. But for some reason, like, we were all so desperate to be back as a football program that we did forget our lot in life a little bit. And I think everyone just convinced themselves that, you know, once you hit 10-3 once, it's super easy to just keep doing it. And Dino even said himself that it wasn't. I think that there was just this assumption by all of us, self included, that things would be a little bit easier than they are. I just don't get, like you said, how a 7-game sample means you're all the way out on a guy who pulled off 10 wins at Syracuse. And like, you know, this is the same fan base that was like all the way out on Mike Hopkins, you know, after a 9-game sample when he had like 3 days to prepare to take over a few seasons ago. So like, I'm not necessarily surprised by this reaction. It's still disconcerting to see everyone like just act like this isn't how sports works. Like, and then like you said too, like if you want to move on, then what happens next? Because realistically, yeah, you have the issue of now there's the fact that, okay, SU's administration, boosters, and fans are unrealistic about expectations for Syracuse. So that's not going to bode well for you. You have the fact that an African-American coach got a very short leash at a place that it's very hard to win. That's not going to bode well for you at all, to be honest. And the fact that, like, what do you think is going to happen again next? Like, you can't, even if those factors don't come into play, you're still going to deal with the fact that even blue bloods rarely can hit on two straight hires. So like, you know, maybe some will say, oh, well, Davers wasn't a hit and that Marone wasn't a hit because of the final record or whatever. But realistically, like, SU's gone, what, 3-2 over the last 5 hires. Like, that's probably a better than average clip, like, for most programs.
And we left out that Coach P was here forever, and obviously it's soured, and you could argue whether or not they fired him a year earlier or a year late. You could make pretty compelling arguments on both sides, I think. But yeah, like, it's not easy to hire well, and if you fire Babers, like, A, he's done another job.
Like, immediately.
He's done too good a job overall. And I see people holding 2016 and 2017 against him. It was a full rebuild. Wow. I think almost everyone would say,
actually, there's a lot of people saying that it wasn't a full rebuild now.
Yeah, it's seriously. Yeah, because we had Dungy. Yes, he inherited a quarterback. Congrats. He inherited a player. And Dungy was amazing. And obviously, I think we're all gaining appreciation for Dungy by the minute. Because even though there were people who I think a lot of the same people who were out on Babers and have probably saying that Dungy was the only reason we were good last year were probably for Dungy to be benched after the Florida State and the North Carolina games last year. He's done too well. I think people who are holding the 2016 and 17 years against him, I think, are out of line with where someone who was looking to hire a Dino Babers would be. 2016, inheriting a team that had been bad for two seasons and beat Virginia Tech and then the year after beat Clemson and, you know, had injury issues both seasons and still like the team was still in it and very, you know, they weren't losing the coach's message. Like wins wise, I don't think anyone was thrilled with winning those four games a year, but like, I think real progress was made those years that led to last year. And even if things fall off this year, it doesn't mean that he can't then like soup things back up. It's just, we have to see it. And there are questions about if he's going to be able to like get this mid-tenure kind of bounce back, because we haven't seen that from him before. It doesn't mean he won't be able to. But yeah, if you fire Babers, he'll have another job and you're going to get into a point where you're seen as a school with unrealistic expectations that doesn't know where it is in the sport. And it's going to be very hard to hire another a coach with the pedigree of Babers. You're just going to limit your scope. You're going to get desperate coaches. Like, you can go hire Houston Nutt. Great. Like, I'm sure we'll all be thrilled. Or you can go hire someone before they're ready to take over an ACC job. And that could implode.
We've done that already.
So you just don't want to put yourself in that position. You want to, if you fire Babers, you want it to, and again, we're getting way ahead of ourselves, but in that universe, you want it to be after, like, there's no doubt and no coaches would be like, oh, they shouldn't have done that. He didn't deserve that. So it's just, we just all, I think everyone just deep breaths, like this year, if it gets out of hand because of injuries and because we just had one glaring offensive line issue, like just one unit was completely broken. Like these are fixable issues. I like that better than like the coach was just completely over his head. I also think Babers like has not done a great job this year, but I think he's allowed a year to figure things out in a position he hasn't been in before. So yeah, it's tough. It sucks. No one likes to be in the position we're in. Hopefully we bounce back. Hopefully we beat Florida State and cost Willie Taggart his job this weekend. It'd be fun. But, you know, I think if the worst thing happens and we win four games again this year, like we'll address that at the end of the season, but we have to understand that this will happen sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, again, if you're not that handful of programs, I mean, even some of those programs, like, you know, Ohio State, Alabama, like, and a handful of others are really like the only, like, even Florida and Michigan and USC and Texas, all those programs have had losing seasons of late.
Alabama lost Louisiana Monroe 12 years ago.
Yeah, yeah, like when the year Nick Saban took over, like there have been, like, every program deals with trials and tribulations, and SU has fewer resources and support systems and like machinations to deal with when you're throwing curveballs. And it feels like, you know, a lot rolling downhill for us because we're always dealing with these things. And that's not going to change until we win consistently. And then it becomes this chicken or egg issue. And I completely understand the frustration with that. I'm a Knicks fan. I'm also a Mets fan. I completely understand what this feels like. I've been rooting for Syracuse sports for decades. Like, I understand what the machinations are here. And some franchises or teams just feel snake bitten. However, like, we don't have the resources that a lot of other schools that can gain more consistency do. We don't have the endowments. People want to look at Duke and Stanford. Guess what? Duke and Stanford are much more prestigious schools. No offense to my alma mater. They're much more prestigious schools. We are not in the same league as them. They are able to do something unique. They also have endowments that dwarf ours significantly.
We're not a state school where kids grow up rooting for Syracuse football. Some do, not a lot.
Yes. But like, and the state of New York is not as talent rich as California. It's not as talent rich as North Carolina. Like, there are so many reasons why SU has deck stacked against it. And it's not to say it can't succeed. Look at last year. Look at, you know, the time under Pasqualoni. And yeah, I will admit that like that time doesn't necessarily apply as much anymore. But there are so many reasons why SU is not equipped to succeed as easily. That doesn't mean it cannot. It just means that we need to give it more time to get there.
Yeah, I think you both, you're threading like a tougher needle being in this position of a Syracuse, or even like you brought up Duke. Like, Duke football still like has a lot of the same issues. It does have a higher endowment, but they've also, I think most of us would sign for like a Cutcliffe plus reality. And they've been super patient and they've done a really good job of understanding what Duke football is. And they've topped out where they're, you know, playing Texas A&M in bowl games and winning the ACC Coastal. I think I have higher aspirations for Syracuse football than what Duke football has been. But if they topped out at like David Cutcliffe Duke, there are worse things. And that is a very respectable program that is recruiting at a higher level and does have some more advantages. But like, I think like, you know, you hope to maybe hit like top tier bowl games more often, but even as like a baseline, I think that's like a pretty realistic goal, but you have to then like understand, like you're going to take some lumps here and there, and you don't jump off of your, you don't jump off the bad bandwagon in terms of a 5-win season or a 4-win season.
Yeah.
As long as it doesn't become very clear that that the coaching staff just doesn't have it.
No, completely agree. I think I think Duke's a perfect reference point just from the sense of like how long this takes sometimes. Like Cutcliffe, first year, 4-8, then 5-7, 3-9, 3-9, where people could have been all the way out, then 6-6, then they had that pretty nice 2013 season where they went 10-4, and 9 wins, 8 wins, they had a 4-win dip, went 7-6, 8-5, they're 4-3 so far this year with some mixed returns. Like that realistically, like, yeah, it'd be great to aspire to be more for Syracuse, and maybe we can one day, but you need to put in the work at that bottom level first. And fact of the matter is that like Dino's just getting started. He already has gotten to like the top level of what Duke was able to do with Cutcliffe, a coach that everyone reveres and finds to be an incredibly effective head coach at Duke. So I, you know, this is why I don't have the patience for the like really, really aggressive like takes on Dino already, because they're mostly baseless. They're mostly functioning in a reality that doesn't exist. Like Dino deserves criticism for what's happening this year and for some of the effects in previous years that are now like exacting themselves on us now, like some of the recruiting stuff, some of the offensive line issues perhaps. But realistically, like Dino's pretty much, I mean, last year arrived ahead of schedule. This year is a downturn from what we see so far under any circumstances. But like, look at something like Duke where, you know what, right now, even at their like, you know, peak under Cutcliffe, they're still recruiting at a top 35-ish to 40-ish at best level, but they're recruiting their type of player. They know what they want to do. They're churning out draft picks. They're getting talent in the door, even without like a ton of blue chips. Like this is something Syracuse can do, but you have to be able to give Dino, who's clearly a good coach under any measure and from every evaluator in the country, no matter what program, no matter what school, you know, even BC and Pitt fans will admit he's a great coach. Like give him the time. And if you don't watch what happens next, it's not going to be fun. You're going to hate watching that even more.
I think I'd be more worried if I feel pretty confident that like, for whatever, like the fringes of the fan base are saying, and again, not to be like both sides die, but I think in this case, like gonna be both sides die because we brought it up. Like some people are just giving him like a weird pass on everything. And then a lot of people are just freaking out about this 3-4 start and like going way overboard. I think I trust John Wildhack more than I've trusted most Syracuse athletic personnel in a long time. He just got what we all believe is a pretty big extension. I think at worst, like just the realities of his contract are going to make it where it's going to be very hard for John Wildhack to make some kind of rash decision, nor that I think he would. I think he understands Syracuse pretty well. He understands where we're like, you know, put, you know, what position we're in. I would feel very, I'd be very surprised if like fire alarms are going off at Manly right now. I think they are probably more in line with where we're at just because like they know the situation at hand and know the obstacles and are around Dino every day. So I think ultimately like the worry there is probably for naught. I don't think there's any situation in which there's going to be any real pressure beyond the pressure that the program is going to feel naturally. And obviously it's going to come from top down from Dino himself. So, you know, I'm not super worried from that end. I think they'll make the right decisions and I think Dino will make whatever moves he has to in the offseason because, you know, if things continue the way they are, like you're going to see some shuffling.
Agreed. I think it's a good place to end us off here. Dan, anything else before we depart?
No, looking forward to this weekend's game, despite what I've seen the last couple of weeks. If you beat Florida State, like I think that name still carries weight and you get back to 4-4 and there's still some upside here, even with like a relatively tough finish with that Duke team, with a better than we expected Louisville team and with a better than we expected Wake team. So still none of those are unwinnable and you beat Florida State and people will be like, okay, well, they're figuring some stuff out. Hopefully DeVito Gets better quick, but again, I don't want him playing if he's not 100%. I think he's just too valuable. And if you punt on a win to get him back for the end of the year or even for next year, if that's the situation, like, I think you have to put the player's health first and do that. So we'll see where we go. It's a weird year, but ultimately, like, I'm not gonna, you know, we just spent a whole podcast basically talking about not going overboard. So take things in stride week by week, and hopefully we get a win in Tallahassee this weekend.
Agreed. Yeah. I mean, I'd love to see a healthy DeVito go, but obviously, you know, a not healthy DeVito doesn't really do us any good. On that note, get some optimism here. Should be a fun-ish game for at least one of the two halves.
Something dumb will happen. Like, there'll be some reason to tune in. It may not be a good reason, but something weird will happen. We all know this. So,
if that's not a ringing enough endorsement, I don't know what is. But that was Dan. I'm Jahan. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Troy Noons and Absolute Podcast. You can rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, on Megaphone, on Spotify, on TuneIn, Stitcher, Overcast, bunch of other services, and go Orange.
Go Orange.